pretty sure that's the first time I've ever replied to you with a sound effect when we weren't even recording.
I feel like when you had them on your iPad and we were in Auburn, you would just hit it.
Oh, well. Yeah, when I was in, when I have it on my iPad or my phone, man, I can't hit it fast enough. I can't leave it alone for sure. It's just crack. It's digital crack.
Smoke weed every day.
Just save it for the show. I have a feeling all that's going to go on the show now. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 488.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleArena.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You are our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are getting closer and closer to alleged tackle football.
And tackle football has already started, just not SEC tackle.
Well, tackle football worth talking about. How about that? tackle football that we care about, involving teams and conferences that actually matter. That's what I'm waiting on. It's weird to have this sort of delayed rollout.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it's like first the little tiny teams play, then we're going to get kind of the mediocre conferences, and then we'll get the SEC. And then the other two don't even play at all until, who knows, Thanksgiving, next spring, ever, you know? So it's all just so surreal. And I don't know how to feel about knowing that, like, Arkansas State is like the media dynasty right now, you know? They're on everywhere. It's our Central Arkansas. All the Arkansas teams. In fact, the Arkansas team getting the least media attention these days is Arkansas.
That's probably funny. Good for them.
Yeah, that's probably. They're flying under the radar while all the other... while the quality Arkansas teams are out there on television. Man, but it's true. I mean, I've seen Central Arkansas twice. I've seen Arkansas State at least once in a big game right against Memphis. And meanwhile, it's like Arkansas doesn't even exist. Of course, when the season starts, it'll still be like Arkansas doesn't exist. So, ba-da-bum, hey-ho, hey-ho.
Come on, man.
So what are you thinking about all this? How are you surviving?
I mean, again, it was nice to have college football back. It wasn't the same, though. Normally, I love this weekend. I love Labor Day weekend. The weather starts to change. We get some big, you know, we got a great kickoff weekend of college football.
Mm.
And this year, there was games, but it wasn't the same, right?
No, it wasn't the same in a lot of ways.
So that was tough, but I'm, you know... we'll get there. I think I'm looking forward to the next few weeks. I think it's going to get better and better, and the SEC is going to play. So, I do think that the SEC is going to play college football games.
Yeah.
I think my percentages may change. I think, again, there will be SEC games canceled. There will be games canceled the week of the game.
Mm-hmm.
There will be games that aren't canceled and players that sit out. But the SEC is going to play. It's coming, and I'm getting excited about it.
They got some Saturdays built in as trap doors for that too, you know, which is kind of cool.
Yep, yep.
That was, in fact, I deleted it, but I actually did a survey on Twitter last week, and we didn't want to talk about it in our primer show that we'll talk about. But I did a survey on Twitter where I asked how many teams will have to play – makeup games in that week before the SEC championship game, because there's no game scheduled currently for the week before the SEC championship game. That's one of the trap doors where if you had to cancel a game, you can try to make it up then because nobody's playing. And I said, you know, like zero, one to two, three to four, and then like five plus. And it seems like about, it was fairly evenly distributed, but I think like a lot of people said zero and a lot of people said five plus. So the middle numbers weren't very, I don't think, weren't very occupied, but people either thought they weren't going to have to make up any, or maybe they think they won't play at all and so they won't have to make up any. Two different, you know, reasons that could happen. Or they just think that there's just going to be so many cancellations that that weekend's going to be full after all. And it could be. You know, Texas A&M doesn't have to be necessarily our last game of the regular season. You know, we think it is, but it may not.
No, you're right. It could be a makeup.
We could play Alabama and then Texas A&M and then like Ole Miss or something, you know. So we'll see. It would suck if we got into the SEC championship game, but we had to play a makeup game against like Mississippi State or LSU or something that week, and the East team didn't have to play. That would tick me off tremendously. Oh, I was going to say, the other thing that ticked me off is, and it's just the way it worked out, but, you know, you're talking about how this is like such a great weekend this past weekend. Labor Day weekend is my favorite weekend of the year because it's Dragon Con and opening of college football both, and it seems like every year I end up either not getting to see games that weekend because of Dragon Con, or I'm heavily distracted and getting them in bits and pieces, or I watch them on recordings when I get home, you know, Monday night or Tuesday. So this year there was no Dragon Con. Everything was online. We did a bunch of pre-recorded panels and live events and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, of all the years I wish Auburn was playing on Labor Day weekend, this is the year I could actually watch them. And there's no Auburn either. So this was like the worst Labor Day weekend ever. We tried so hard to make online Dragon Con work, and it was better than the alternative of nothing. But not having it and not having college football, not having, well, you know, real college football, not having Auburn, the SEC, was just hard. It was just psychologically hard. It made me depressed. It really did. So
I get it.
Yeah. By the way, I recorded 4 separate hours of just hanging out and chatting with folks at Dragon Con virtually. We had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday virtual food court where whoever just came along, we sat, you know, I pulled them into the chat room. And then on Monday, we had the virtual MARTA station heading out to the airport to come home. And dang it, I was trying to get you on there. I wanted to have you on there to talk. And what happened was I thought I'd sent you a link. And so when you popped up in the comments, I thought, oh, John's about to come in. And I kept waiting and waiting. And then I thought, oh, I guess he was just saying, hey, and he couldn't. And then later you're like, I see your text where you're like, where's the link? And I'm like, oh no. So I'm really, really sorry. I wanted to have you on there and I just thought I'd sent you the link and you were busy. So it just didn't work out, but, oh well. But if you want to, if anybody out there wants to see it's fun conversations with Bobby Nash and Michael Gordon and several other, you know, really entertaining writers and fun folks from Dragon Con, just go to White Rocket TV on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search White Rocket TV, and they're like the last 4 videos that pop up. It's us just hanging out talking during Dragon Con. It's really fun. It was really good. So did you watch any games? Did you watch all of any games? They were mostly blowouts, weren't they?
Yeah, there wasn't any game that I stayed with the whole time. I watched, you know, some of the early games. I watched some of, you know, a good bit of Arkansas State Memphis. That was a fun game.
Yeah, I saw some of that.
I watched a good bit of BYU Navy.
Jeez. Yeah, I turned that game on, maybe. And it was 48-3, and I just turned it right back off. I'm like, okay.
But I think one of the stories that came out of the game was that Navy had not practiced like any live tackling on either side of the ball.
It showed.
Like BYU was way more physical and the Navy guys were kind of a step slow and not tackling well. And it made a big impression.
Yeah, they took that Book of Mormon and smacked them upside the head, didn't they? They dropped it on their battleship and put it in the bottom of the ocean. Dang. That was I turned it on. It was 48-3, and as I turned it on, BYU was scoring again. They just couldn't be stopped. They were trying to run the clock out. You know, they were like running up the middle every play, and they kept scoring. Yep. So you know, yep. It's not like they were Spurrier out there throwing bombs every play when it's 48-3. They were just running full back up the middle and scoring touchdowns. So what can you do? Nothing. So yeah, I just wasn't impressed with much of any of the football that was allegedly on TV or alleged football that was on TV. So I'm just looking forward. I guess so. This coming weekend, we get like Clemson and North Carolina and Oklahoma and all, right?
Yeah, but the Big 12 schools, I think, are all playing cupcake teams. I don't think there's
a
conference game in that conference.
What?
And the ACC teams are playing, but there's a few ACC games that are on TV, like Clemson, Wake Forest, and North Carolina, Syracuse. There's a few others, like Georgia Tech, Florida State in the afternoon.
Okay. I'll put that on for sure, because it's name brands.
Yeah, that's right. Duke, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Syracuse, North Carolina. That's kind of your early mid-afternoons. And then, like, Clemson at Wake Forest is the night game on ABC or whatever. So, sure, give it a shot.
It's better than Central Arkansas and Austin Peay, for crying out loud, which is what we've been getting. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, well. Let's see. We've got Auburn practicing now. They canceled some stuff last week, but now they're like pedal to the metal, aren't they?
They are. We had the big scare last week. A lot of guys tested positive or were exposed to people, and so they had to cancel a bunch of practices. But we're back to full speed. They had a scrimmage on Saturday, and so it's definitely looked like Auburn's going to get in the number of practices it's allowed to get in before the scrimmage. So that's good news.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's interesting, news coming out of it. We had Coinus Miller kicked off the team. It wasn't ever clear to me, did he leave the program, or did he opt out for this season after getting in trouble, or what exactly? Is he still in the – what is the deal with him?
No, he's gone. He had a big blow-up in practice last week and met with the coaches, and they kind of – it was a mutual parting of the ways.
Yeah, it just wasn't clear to me whether he actually got kicked out of the program entirely and is transferring, or whether he just decided to opt out because he's just mad, and he's just going to be back next year or something.
He will not be back. He will be back somewhere next year, not on Auburn.
No, oh, okay. All right. So what does that do to our defensive line?
I mean, some people were freaking out a little bit, I think. I'm not losing a ton of sleep. He's a guy who had a lot of potential but hadn't ever realized it, right?
Yeah.
So one of the tackle spots is, going to be held by Truesdale, and the other one was, theoretically a battle between this guy, Connus Miller, and Daquan Newkirk. Yeah, we've got the two, we recruited smartly two junior college defensive tackles.
Oh, okay.
Who are both on the team, they're both playing well and both practicing well. And we signed a defensive tackle last year, a guy that can play tackle Jalen Stone Handy. And then we signed a defensive tackle this year who's a top 100 player in the country. He was a big, signee at Tennessee named Jay Hardy. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that the other players have compared to young Derrick Brown.
Oh, right. A big cat was talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a lot of okay. Let's ease the throttle on that.
Yeah.
But I think clearly we're talking about a guy who's like the, third string defensive tackle, but a guy that has a lot of promise in the future. And again, the NCAA said that nobody's burning a year of eligibility this year, basically. So there's no reason not to play some freshmen. And Kevin Steele likes to get him in the game anyhow, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no reason not to. To get those guys in there. But, we got the Marquise Burks is one of the big junior college tackles we signed. And I think he's probably going to be the third guy in there, after Truesdale and Newkirk. So I think we have depth. I think it's not a panic situation. But I think, signing those two JUCO defensive linemen looks pretty smart now. And I think and Handy and Hardy – it's tricky. Handy and Hardy are the two big signees in the last two classes. I think those guys are the future. So
yeah, we like to have depth there, and Rodney Garner likes to have depth there and play quite a few. And it sounds like we're never going to be able to replace our two guys. But it's interesting that, like you say, I have heard of the people that are on the defensive line right now, I've heard one of them compared to Marlon Davidson, and totally separately, I've heard another one compared to Derrick Brown. So,
yeah.
again, slow your roll, but it would be nice. Of course, we've also had Mark Anthony and Cleopatra Richards compared to Kerryon Johnson, except better. Did you catch that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, again, it's early Kerryon, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's at the stage of Kerryon was as a, you know, his first year playing in that kind of, he's that kind of player. So,
yeah.
Physically, people are excited about Mark Anthony Richards. He's getting a lot of buzz, catching the ball, running the ball, potentially a kick returner. So I'm excited about him. I'm excited to see what he can do.
There's just so much we can do with that too. Like, you know, if he's great, he's like the emperor or something, you know, the general to go along with.
Dancing by the Nile.
Right. But on the other hand, if he's a bust, then he's Cleopatra, or if he's really good, he's Mr. Fantastic Reed Richards, and if he's kind of a bust, like he's that. The Invisible Woman Sue Richards. So it just lays out in front of us. There's so much we can do with him. So
glad that we got the planning for
got it all. Richards. Oh, got it all laid out. I got to get some Fantastic Four audio clips to go along with my Ancient Rome and Egypt audio clips. I guess I could find like something from Mark Anthony and Cleopatra, like the Elizabeth Taylor movie or something, or something from Rome, the HBO Rome. I don't know. There's just so many options here. He's just an embarrassment of riches when it comes to the soundboard. I don't know where to go with him. I don't know where to stop. Oh no. Oh, you're gonna rue the day he signed with us, John. You're going to rue the day. Dang you, Richard. You're going to sound like Dr. Doom. Dang you, Richards. Curse you, Richards. Oh, no. Oh, no. You and Dr. Doom cursing Richards.
Well, but it's Dr. Doom and I both got to stop. And let's not get ahead of ourselves here. We got lots of other good running backs on the roster, and he's got to win the spot. And one of the other ones had a big play in the scrimmage on Saturday.
Yes, he did. Talk so about that.
Mr. Shivers had a big pass kit reception for a touchdown. So I think that's, you know, I think, again, I'm all in on Mark Anthony Richards and Tank Bigsby as being the two running backs that gained the most yards this year. But I could really see a situation where Shivers is the designated experienced hand starter. I really think they could do that.
Well, somebody and summed again, it up really well. He's the number nine last year. The Baylor kid.
Cam Martin.
He's the Cam Martin. I would go back and say like the Trey Smith. You know, he's the guy that probably isn't your every down back, but he's been around long enough, he gets the start for a game or two. Yeah, so.
I think Corey Grant.
Yeah, he is very Corey Grant-ish. Look, we know that he has his moments because he's just so determined, right? He's like Lionel James. He's so focused and so determined. You could see it on that amazing touchdown play. Not only how he ran over people, but then once he got in the end zone, he was so fired up. You know, he's ready to go over and lead the cheerleading squad as soon as he's done scoring the touchdown because he's so fired up, and I like that. But on the other hand, you know, he wasn't casual about it. He's like, yeah! But on the other hand, I also know that he's the kind of guy, you get him in space, and he's elusive and quick. But you don't run him into the center of the line every play. Because, again, he might bust one like he did on that. But remember, when he scored that touchdown in Alabama, he wasn't lining up at running back. He wasn't giving the ball and a handoff up the middle. He was the jet sweep guy. He was the Corey Grant guy, like you said. And although I never saw Corey Grant just run over somebody and knock their helmet off either. And so,
yeah, I mean, it's not a great comparison because I think he's much more physical. I think he can be a physical inside runner. And that's where the exciting part is. I mean, if he turns into a good receiver, then he could be a really exciting piece for the offense.
Well, that's the interesting thing is that our current offensive coordinator, who I just am never going to be able to remember his name. Yeah, Chad likes to throw the ball to all over the field, not just to receivers, and that's very different from Gus. He likes to throw the ball to running backs and tight ends a lot. And so we might actually finally use some of these other weapons we have besides, you know, I mean, honestly, a lot of the time our passing game is look at Seth Williams, and then look at Stove, and then get sacked or throw it out of bounds if neither one of them can get it. And I'm really anxious to see other outlets, other places the ball can go, right? Gus has just never been – this is the thing that kills me. The only time in Gus's offense that we throw the ball to the running back is when it's a predetermined play that's where we're going to throw the ball, right? The running back is supposed – in the flare mm-hmm. is supposed
yeah,
to
no,
be –
right.
It's he's supposed to be a release valve, a safety valve. It's not the number one option. It's not supposed to be. But the only time we throw the ball out there is when it's the number one option and the only option. And it never works because of that. And because we determine it based on personnel. So if running back comes in, you know that's what's going to happen. So if we actually start throwing the ball to all the running backs, coming out of the backfield or otherwise, that's promising to me. I think that helps.
No, I think 100% right. In modern football, the running back so often is the safety valve, dump-off pass.
Yeah.
And
we never do that.
Using them that way gives the quarterback another easy throw when the other people are covered. And I think it just takes advantage of the way defenses are going to play us. And I think it's going to help Bo Nix. It's going to help the running backs. It's going to help the offense.
See, that's one thing about the way Gus's offense works that sometimes I like it and sometimes I don't. A lot of the times I don't, is that his offense, his plays are very predetermined toward doing one thing. And if that one thing works, he eats you alive. But if the defense kind of knows what he's doing and is ready for it, it doesn't work at all. It's absolutely shut down. I think that's why his offense is either gain 500 yards or 5 yards, you know what I mean, in a game. You never see it in the middle. It's either we get things going and just destroy teams like Purdue in that bowl game, you know, or we can't do anything like Florida, you know. And so it just feels like he decides before the play even goes in, we're going to do this exact thing. There's never a lot of there. And let me put it this way. He relies on the stuff before the snap to make that work, as opposed to after the snap, letting the play and the quarterback and things like that make the determination. You know what I mean? Like, he makes it super obvious what he's gonna do because it's just one thing, but then he obscures it with motion and formation. But once the ball is snapped, there's just one thing that play is gonna do usually, and either they're onto it or they're not. So I'm hoping we get a little bit away from that now.
Well, the biggest part of that is I think that's very fair, and I think the biggest part of that is in the passing game, and I think Morris is going to shake that up and make it better.
So yeah, I certainly hope so.
There's going to be more shorter and intermediate options, not screen passes, but short passes and intermediate passes and more middle-of-the-field stuff. I really think that's going to happen.
Did you see the receivers saying that – I forget which one it was – that said that they all have to know all their positions now?
Yes, again, another really smart thing they're doing. In the past, receivers were stuck in one spot, one position. So again, like there was a point last year we talked about on the podcast where Seth Williams and Schwartz were playing the same spot, and so Schwartz didn't play. And that was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's insane. And so the idea now is they're cross-training them all to play all the spots. So you have to be able to run all the routes that are required at all the spots.
I think it was Schwartz that was telling that to the reporter. Yeah, it was Schwartz saying that we're having to learn all the different positions so that we can mix and match and be interchangeable. Yeah, I love it. I love it. And Lord, I mean, surely we'll find ways to use Schwartz creatively. There's nothing more frustrating than knowing you have super talented players on the team and you're not finding creative ways to get them the ball, let them do something with it. That's so frustrating.
Yep.
Let's see. What about the offensive line? It looks like we're getting one, right? It looks like that the two deep is coming together.
Yeah. Again, they talked about having kind of their goal is to have 10 guys because they want to be able to have backups. And if something happens, they can switch guys out. The first team coming out of the scrimmage, it looks like, is Austin Troxell and Brodarius Ham at tackle, Tayshawn Manning and Brandon Council at guard, and Nick Brahms at center.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, We've heard about him for 2 years. Troxell's been hurt a lot, but has a ton of potential as a tackle, and Auburn's liked him for a while. And then I think Manning, you know, could be a real, you know, a solid run blocker and make a difference there. So I feel good about that. We played Brohm some at the end of the year as a bigger, better blocking center. So I feel like, again, this line, and we know him could be a mauler. So I like the idea of, you know, this group potentially being better run blocking. So we'll see. And there's still some competition going on. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Keandre Jones wins one of the guard spots before it's over. But you feel like, again, they've got a solid two deep of guys that can play, and it's just a matter of getting them more experience and getting them work together and that kind of stuff so they're ready for the first game.
Yeah. I guess we just probably don't need any injuries. That would be bad, because if we can put together a decent starting offensive line, and hopefully they can stay together long enough to develop the fabled chemistry, right? And I know they practiced the run game a few days ago, and now they're starting to work more on the passing, which is encouraging. So we'll see. I guess we'll see, huh? Because that's the spot we have the most question marks about, for sure. So, oh, and did you see we have, speaking of, we're going to talk about position battles really quickly, but you notice we have a new backup quarterback that's in second place now.
Bowling Green transfer Grant Loy. Mm-hmm. It looks like he's the number two quarterback. So the second string guy, you know, passing everybody's favorite grandfather as the backup quarterback. I mean, Loy, you know, seems to be a bigger, pretty athletic guy. He has some starting experience. So I think it's smart to bring him in. And I see the value of having an experienced quarterback that has played a good bit of college football. And I think, you know, I think they would feel good if they had to run him out there. You still got the other guys on the team. You got the, you know, I don't think they're going to play Chael Garnett, the true freshman, unless it's an absolute blowout or, you know, something like that. But I mean, you know, if we're winning big and they want to get Bo out of the game, I could see them getting Grant Loy some snaps so he's ready if he needs to be.
I want Cord Sandberg to play some, so I can call him Carl Sandberg, and then when he comes on the field, I can say the backup quarterback comes on little cat feet. He sits looking over harbor and city on silent haunches and then scores a touchdown. That would be, you know, that would make me happy. That would please me. In at quarterback, number 17, Carl Sandberg. Three-time Pulitzer Prize winner Carl Sandberg, now at quarterback. he can write a biography of Abraham Lincoln with one hand and carve you up in the passing game with the other. That'd be nice. Let's see. Position battles, newcomers, what have we not touched on already? We've touched on a little bit of this.
I mean, yeah, the spot, you know, the cornerback spot opposite. We know that, you know, our guy McCreary is going to be the starter at one spot, but the other spot is a battle between you know, sophomore Nehemiah Pritchett, JUCO signee Marco Domio, and then actually redshirt freshman Jalen Simpson's been getting some shots there too. So those probably, you know, I mean, you got to think it's going to be Pritchett or Domio, but the young guy, and then also even Matthew Hill's getting some playing time.
I saw that Matthew Hill is, like, not only that, but he's currently looking as being one of the two kickoff return guys. That's what I was going to say. He kind of has a reputation as a special teams monster. He wasn't the receiver we were hoping he would be, other than in like the A-Day game. You know, we have a long history of guys that do great in the A-Day game and then end up changing position later. And I'm always like, I guess they see something in regular practice that we didn't see on A-Day because dang, you know, but okay. But yeah, so there he goes. But and I guess King is still at punt returner, but they're working some other people as backup. Oh, and Shivers is the kickoff.
Christian Tuss.
Shivers is probably the number one kickoff return guy, with Matthew Hill just kind of as like the other side of the field, right? You know, because you usually have two guys back for kickoffs, so Hill would be one, but the ball would go to Shivers. It is interesting how they seem to be trying to find ways to use Shivers. I mean, he's got a motor, right? And they just want to get him on the field.
Yep. That's cool. And again, he was the guy that ran some track too, so clearly has the kind of speed that a kickoff returner needs.
Yeah. Any other newcomers we haven't mentioned? I guess Tank Bigsby looks. We haven't seen a lot, but he's getting good notices.
No, we haven't seen much, but I hear good stuff. I mean, the other newcomers, Zeke, is our Australian punter is on the field now, Oscar Chapman, and then also
Oscar.
The true freshman wide receiver from Virginia.
You have to pronounce it like
the true
Oscar.
Freshman wide receiver
Sorry. Go ahead.
The true freshman wide receiver from Virginia who reclassified, Malcolm Johnson, is also out there practicing and playing now. So, again, he's a guy that would be in high school at this point, but they're not playing high school football in Virginia this fall, so he went ahead and enrolled, and it's not going to cost him a year of eligibility, so practice with the team.
High school
gets in a game.
High school football, SEC, nothing but conference games. Yeah, it's about the same. Good gosh. Good Lord, man. He's not going to – his head's going to be spinning, I would imagine.
But again, it has to look like it's not going to cost him your eligibility. He'll still technically be have 4 years left or after this year. So go learn something and be ready for next year.
Yeah. Yeah, well. And then the other freshman receivers look like they're getting in the mix too. They're supposed to be good, right? They're a bunch of four-star son of a gun, so that'd be cool.
Yeah, and again, we're going to need – them to provide depth this year, especially the kind of year it is. But also, you look at a year from now, a bunch of those guys might be starting. So we need to identify some guys who can make plays out of that group.
Seth Williams is Seth Williams, and Fleisch has his flash speed, and Stove has been through the wars. You just take, you have him out there because he's good, but he also is very experienced now. Remember, he was playing as a freshman before any of those other receivers in his class. He was the first one. That's why it seems like he's been there forever. He played as a true freshman just immediately, and I believe he was injured for a year, wasn't he? I think he had a medical red shirt. And so, yeah, Hill's been there like since 16 or something. Didn't he come in with Stidham or something? Probably. Seems like it.
No.
Well, this would, if he did and he took a redshirt year, this would be his senior year. I think maybe so.
No, he has more time than that.
You think he's not a senior?
No.
Oh.
I'll look right now. But
wow, I would be surprised if Eli Stove is not a senior because he was in that class. Okay. He was in the,
I think Eli Stove is a senior. I think Stove is a senior.
What now? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
You were correct. Stove, I'm sorry. You're correct. Stove is a senior.
Yeah, and I feel like he took a medical year because he tore up his leg, and so he came in 16 with Stidham. But maybe not. Maybe he's a senior and never took a medical year. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe he was just sick. Maybe he was just hurt in the off season or something. Was that it? Maybe he got hurt and was on crutches like the whole off season and then came back in like the second or third game of 18 or something. That kind of rings a bell. Because I know he played the opening game last year. He played against Oregon. So, well, anyway, we'll figure it out. Let's see. We've got, oh dear, John. Oh, dear. In a couple of weeks, we open up against Kentucky. Yep.
The 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
Come on, man.
Wow, that sucks. We are playing arguably the most competitive game of the opening weekend of the SEC, and they've got us at the 11 o'clock. What is that? Is it just name brand or something or what?
I think so. I mean, I think that's a piece of it. Alabama, Missouri is the night game on ESPN.
Oh, Lord. That's just because of Alabama. You know? That has nothing to do with Missouri, I guarantee you. Nothing to do with Missouri.
Again, Mississippi State and LSU is the CBS game, and I get that. They're the defending national champs.
And Mississippi State will have the Pirate, and it'll be fun, so that'll be interesting.
That's right. So I don't. I'm not fussing about that one, but our game will be a much more competitive, entertaining game.
It
Alabama,
will.
Missouri,
so. I'm afraid it's going to be way too competitive. I'm not happy about it at all, but we have barbecue to eat before we talk about that. How many passes do you think Mississippi State will throw in that LSU game?
60.
I was going to say 55, so you upped me by five. I like it. That's cool, man. That's, whew. That quarterback's arm's going to be hanging off when that game is over. because that's what Leach does, man. He's, you know, in fact, let me, if anybody out there wasn't listening a while back when I said I read this, I listened to it on Audible, which was really good, really fun. I listened to the book that's like the history of the air raid, and it talks of all about Leach and about how Mummy, and I mean, the best parts of it are them like going from little tiny high school to high school and little college to college, like in the middle of Ohio or in the middle of Iowa, you know, coaching, you know, agreeing to make like $20 a year to coach the school, you know, and against, and it's just these, you know, these absolutely obscure colleges you've never heard of. And they'd get like 900 yards of offense against some other obscure. Such a fun book. It's really, really good. And it's,
The Perfect Pass?
Yes, The Perfect Pass. That's such a good book. I absolutely recommend it. If you're a football fan and you particularly like, you know, not just how offenses work and everything, which it's really good at explaining, but it also has the personalities involved, like, you know, who Mummy was having to deal with, the college presidents and the wives and the families of the recruits are like, why should we go play for you at this little school? And he's like, because we're going to get 1,000 yards of offense and 100 points every game, and it's going to be awesome. And they're like, okay. And it's just, you know, it's just a really fun. Have you read that?
No, I have not. I'm putting it on my list right now.
Oh, it's so good, John. Yeah. I listened to it on Audible. And it's one of those books that's just really, I enjoy nonfiction really better on Audible than fiction because, you know, you can miss little pieces of it and not miss the story. You just like, you know, it's just like kind of listening to the news or something. But when you really get into it, it's a totally fun, it starts way back with the origins of the passing game and then very quickly comes up to Hal Mummy saying, well, why don't we just do this? Why don't we do that? And then here comes Mike Leach as like his, you know, he's, Mummy is like Dr. Frankenstein and Leach is like Igor. And the two of them together, it's just, you know, they're cooking up stuff in the lab that's crazy, and it's just so much fun. So, yeah, that was one of my favorite books I listened to on audio last year. I really enjoyed that. So, George is playing, you say, who are they playing on the night game? Oh, it's us you're talking about. You skipped ahead a week, right?
Yeah, no, only in terms of our schedule, the first two games have been scheduled, and the LSU game on Halloween has been scheduled. Is a cool CBS boy. Game. Other than that, I don't think any of our time slots are scheduled.
Yeah.
So, but we Kentucky at noon.
Week two. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Kentucky at noon. Week and one.
Week two, we go to Georgia, and it's a night game again. We'll talk about this some next week, but I think it's going to be weird, the lack of home field advantage, I think, in a lot of these places. So.
Yeah, that is
not being the same.
Well, it's just that's such an integral part of SEC football. And it's going to look like a day with different colored jerseys on one side of the team, I think. Except that, honestly, a day has big crowds, too. So it's what it's really going to look like is like a scrimmage with one. It's like it's going to look like, you know, Kentucky or Georgia decided to scrimmage with Auburn. And I'm just not really sure. Is it going to feel like a real Auburn-Georgia game? I mean, I know we're going to be like rabid when the game's underway, but is it going
to
feel?
I was going to say, it is to us.
Yeah, but I mean, the
Navy game last night was kind of weird from the crowd ambiance perspective.
Yeah.
But all of these games, there'll be whatever 20,000 people there. So it's not going to be like that. There'll be some people there and they'll be making some.
Well, I guess it's just from the standpoint of tension that you can cut like a knife with a knife, that'll be there because we'll be playing Georgia and the possibility of beating Georgia and the possibility of losing to Georgia will be hanging over us like Damocles' sword. And so that tension will be there and we will be focused. It just won't feel the same while we're doing that because it's going to feel like a scrimmage. And so I don't know that it'll carry the same. I guess it might help if it's at night. Nighttime can cover a multitude of sins. If it was, I think that 11-12 a.m., whichever time slot you're in, that 11-12 o'clock Auburn-Kentucky game in bright midday sunlight with hardly anybody in the stands, that's going to be unpleasant. In so many ways, that's going to be unpleasant. That's the one I'm kind of dreading. A nighttime game at Georgia, right? It's at Georgia? Yeah. See, that's a little better. Because in the dark, it's not quite the same as when the sun is just shining down on empty, empty reflective bleachers so much. That's, they need to do like Formula One does and just put out the big banners on the seats, you know, that that just kind of gives you something other than empty seats to look at. Put some big banners around the stadium that show, that cover, that show like the faces of the players and the, and Aubie and the AU and all that, you know, something like that. Oh, oh, speaking of Aubie, did you see his basketball shot today?
I did not.
Okay, I got to tell you real quick. So Aubie, there's a video where, you know, Chantel Trimatier, the great women's basketball star from Auburn that I had a class with, you know, when we and I were there, I had class with her. And, you know, she does these videos now where she, like, makes these incredible trick shots from across the building or whatever in basketball. So there's a video now. I don't know exactly where it was. I think my wife found it on Instagram or something. But there's a video of her sitting there talking to Aubie, and they decide to do trick shots together. And Aubie, they're in, like, the old Coliseum, way up in the upper part. And Aubie does a shot from, like, way up in the rafters, diagonal at the goal. So I'll leave it at that, and you guys can find it, but it's worth watching because she's so cool. And they rope Aubie in on it too, and I mean, Aubie's trying to make a trick shot in all of his fur, you know, in his big furry head, trying to make that shot, and it's absolutely worth watching if you can find it, but I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Let's see what else going on in terms of our TV schedules for this weekend and for Auburn.
I mean, again, the LSU game is on Halloween. It's the CBS game. So not a night game on Halloween, which would have been cool, but, yeah, but also kind of good from a you know, parents having to deal with Halloween stuff perspective. You know, I think TV-wise, it's going to be a little weird this year because I think the SEC, you know, we're only playing conference games. I think there's going to be a lot of SEC games at good time slots and stuff. So, but I don't. You know, I think, again, we got 2 weeks until the SEC plays, and the ACC and the Big 12 are starting this weekend, but there's, you know, the games are pretty blah, blah this weekend. I think a week from now, the 19th, the weekend before the SEC starts, there's some good games on TV, some fun games. And then we get to the SEC weekend, I think that's when the season will feel real and things will really start to take off.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's see. Do we have any other news before we get to our mid-show break? I don't think so. So let me go ahead and thank the folks to keep our show on the air. We got listener questions coming up and a couple other things, and then we'll wrap up. But our show has no advertisers. We are entirely dependent on you guys, and we tend to gain a patron and lose a patron on roughly equal numbers every few weeks. And so think about signing up and being the newest one to come in. We call your name during every episode. You get to do all the various activities we do during the year, like the March Madness and fantasy games and stuff like that. And you also get access to shows like We Believe way ahead of the rest of the folks. And we've got two more episodes of that coming along soon. But if you want to, for as little as a dollar a month, go to www.auwishbone.com and join up, sign up to be part of the family. And we would appreciate it immensely so we can keep our programs on the air. Here are our current patrons as they currently exist. We have Samuel Salvatore and Christopher Burleson, along with Phil Amthor. And then we have Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, and William Morgan, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Logan Chilton, Tom Anderson, and Richard Stevens. And then we have Benjamin Bloodworth, one of our newest members, Connor Davis, James Greenwell, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Ritchie, Phil Davis, and John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, and AU Falling Up, Kevin Smith, Winston Boddy, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B, Shane Bailey, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Ann Kangian, Clay Henson, George Gaston, Catherine England, John McCune, David Evers, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Rich Reimer, Timothy, Chris Hilton, Eric Mahan, Di Bama, Sarah Hines, We have several new names in the ranks this time. Darris Benton, Blake Heron, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Kevin Kinoy, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Hugh Anderson, Rob Morgan, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, Russell Milling, Chris Thrash, Earl Ricks, Spanky, Chris, Jason Albrick, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Matthew Flowers, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Trevor Johnson, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, James Taylor, Brant Rumble, Justin Bean, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, and finally, Mick Vigicana, Joey Miller, and Mark Squire, along with our one-time and anonymous donors. We appreciate you guys so much. Go to www.auwishbone.com and hit the big button to sign up and be part of the family. We appreciate it. And one of the things I regretted about not getting to do Dragon Con this year, John, is that usually I get to see quite a few of our patrons and our Wishbone listeners who aren't patrons, just, you know, various people that we know on here. A lot of them come by the table. And so I was sad about that. If Dragon Con had happened this year, we would have probably busted our rear ends to get our Auburn book out in time. But I'm kind of in a way glad we didn't, because now we've basically got a few more months to get it polished up and put together the way that we want it to be. So I think it'll be, you know, I wanted to have it for the folks that we would see, but now I think it'll be even stronger, and that's good. So there was something else I was going to ask about you, but I don't remember now. So I will just move on along and say, let's see. We did a special episode last week. Tell the folks what they missed and what they want to go access.
So we talked about this for a while, that we wanted to do a podcast that was like an introductory podcast. If you're a new Auburn fan or a new listener to the podcast and you're like, I don't get why they're doing this, this episode explained a lot about Auburn fandom and the university and Auburn football, but also kind of the podcast and the history of it and why we do things like we do and the different elements of it. And so I think if you're a new person, I think it's probably a good listen. If you're an experienced person, I think it's probably a, you know, relaxing, fun listen, especially the part about the podcast. So the idea is to create something that's kind of evergreen. If you have a new person that you're introducing the podcast to, you're like, hey, listen to this one first and it'll explain stuff. And especially someone who's not a college football fan or is just getting into it, I think it'll help.
It's currently the most recent. I guess when this show goes up and people are hearing this, it'll be the previous one on Podbean and on iTunes. And so I didn't have any pressing need to put it up on the page yet. But next week I'm going to, or later this week, I'm going to go ahead and put a permanent audio player just for it on our www.auwishbone.com page, so that it can easily be found and played and referred to and linked to, you know, totally separate from having to go dig through our regular feed, just like I do the We Believed. And if you didn't know, folks, if you're wanting to listen to any of the 8 We Believed episodes so far, you don't have to go digging back through all these episodes. Just go to www.auwishbone.com, and all 8 of them so far are laid out in their own little individual players, little software things that I was able to put in there and install. So the other two will be there eventually, and so will the primer episode. So I guess now we have to travel to the House of Commons.
Thank you. Order, questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
Please clap.
What we got?
All right. Thank everybody who asked questions this week.
Always.
Our first question is from Carl Von Drunker on Twitter, and he says, I keep hearing the expectation for Bo Nix to get 3,000 total yards and 20 touchdowns in 2020. Is this reachable in a 10-game SEC season? He had 2,800-ish total yards and 16 touchdowns in 2019. So my first answer is I'm planning to write a prediction piece about Bo Nix's season and post it on the War Eagle Reader.
Ooh, very good, very good.
No, I'm not. I am 100% not going to do that.
You are referring.
I did that.
Go ahead. Yeah, you're referring to something from our history. Go ahead.
I did that for the Jeremy Johnson year, and it exists on the internet, and I will never, ever do that again.
Blame yourself?
Project forward. Yes, I do blame myself. It's not all me, but I share my part of that blame, and you have to learn from things like that, and I will not be doing massive Bo Nix projections. I mean, you asked a question about will we get to 1,000 yards? Will a runner have 1,000 yards? I think it's the same question. Because there are fewer games, I think the stat totals will be lower, right, in the course of the season. So I think these Bo Nix numbers probably a little aggressive. I think because they're all SEC games, it's more likely to, he's going to – if we played eight SEC teams and four cupcakes,
right,
maybe he doesn't play a lot of the four cupcakes, right?
That's true.
So
– that's true. Well, it's just like I was asking if we'd have a 1,000-yard rusher on Twitter, and people are saying yes, like 50-something percent said yes. And I'm like, I don't know what games you're expecting them to get the 200, 250-yard, cupcake padding to the icing, to do that, because we're not playing anybody. By the way, John goes to Jeremy at the War Eagle Reader and turns in his article on Bo Nix's great lofty season to come, and then
whose funeral is it? Yours.
Whose funeral is it? Yours.
Exactly. There's a reason.
That's right. I like it.
All right. Next question is from George Gaston, who says,
yeah,
what is your reaction to Southern Miss's coach resigning after one game, the loss to South Alabama? There must not have been a high buyout. Still, I thought programs would be slow to take those sort of actions. Did you know that? We already have the coaching carousel going?
He went to the Jack Crow School of Public Relations, I guess. Did they lose to Citadel?
They played close. I mean, they lost to South Alabama, who's been historically not good, and they had high expectations and a lot of returning starters, and they look like crud, and South Alabama beat them. But at the same time, like, it's one game into a weird season. Like, you're not going to go hire somebody now. So what are you doing? It must have been the team completely unprepared or something. I don't know.
Yeah. That's that. I was like, did a double take when I read that the other day. So yeah, that's crazy. I don't have any idea.
I think in general, schools would be much more conservative because of the financial crunch, not because of anything else, just because schools have less money. So they're much less likely to throw any money they do have in a buyout. When schools are laying off people and closing other athletic programs, a buyout seems like a really bad idea.
And do you want to be the school that fires a guy in the COVID year when there's so many extenuating circumstances? You know, there's just so many things you can point to and say, well, you know, he didn't have a fair shake his last year because it was that, you know, it was the COVID year. I feel like everybody kind of gets a pass. They're just trying to get through this season and not lose money any more than they already are. It's all there, you know, so.
All right. Our next question is from Preston Settle, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com. And the title of his email is Vote Yes for Sandboard Fan Club.
Yay.
Smoke weed every day.
He said, there you go. He said,
please clap.
John, will there be bowl games this year? War Eagle, Preston Settle.
Will there be bowl games? Well, every time I ask something like that, you remind me that none of them have been canceled. So I guess that means yes, right?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think will there be some bowl games? Yes. I think at the point we're at now, I think there's going to be some bowl games somewhere. I don't know if there's going to be bowl games everywhere and every bowl game's going to happen. Every bowl game isn't going to happen because there's not as many teams playing college football. But I think there will be some bowl games.
I just like the idea of playing the Rose Bowl in like June. I just think that would be hilarious if the Rose Bowl is in June. Like if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 decide to play in the spring and they play the Rose Bowl like right after that. That would be hilarious.
All right. Our next question is from Samuel Salvatore.
Yes.
He says, hello, guys, and War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
He says, hope you are well and healthy. He says, going back to what you said about you catching UGA early because they have suspensions or arrest, did you see that Georgia's quarterback opted out for the season and is going to declare for the draft, would this classify as an opted-out NFL draft curse for the UGA player?
And I say you!
I was going to bring it up in around the SEC section. It is a gigantic decision. So Jamie Newman was the transfer from Wake Forest. I think people believed he was going to be the starting quarterback for Georgia. He had spent the most time practicing and working with the new offensive coordinator. The transfer from Southern Cal, and that people think it's going to be he, or they have a redshirt freshman that's competing with him. And so I think it's, you know, the guy from Southern Cal is coming off a big injury, and he was just okay there.
Yep.
So I think Newman was really the guy that was kind of built to run the spread offense they wanted to run.
Yep.
And so now they have to kind of step back and do some different things. So it's a big development.
They're going to be leaning on that defense and running the ball. I can just see Kirby.
Exactly right.
Kirby's going in that shell. I don't know if it's a smart shell, but it's a Kirby shell.
I think it's fair.
And I think this gives us a better – I'd much rather play them in this situation sooner rather than later, you know?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Again, new quarterback.
Changing their offense, not really sure what they're doing, on the back foot, and then we come in there with an experienced quarterback now and new running back that they haven't seen, and a new offense and passing game and tight ends that they haven't seen. I mean, we may not be as effective on defense quite as we were last year, but I feel like we can surprise them and smack them in the mouth a little bit on offense that they're not expecting. Of course, it could mean a very low-scoring game on both sides of the ball because, you know, Georgia's defense might shut our offense down, but we might be able to shut down their reduced offense and it ends up being 3-0, 3-2. There you go. Everybody loved that.
I think that's fair.
3-2, man. Oh, man.
I do think I think it's good for us, regardless of this Newman opting out thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's definitely better than if he played.
Exactly like you said. It's, yeah. All right. And the last email is from Johnny Dent.
Yep.
Who says, howdy, fellas. How hard is it going to be for a team to go undefeated this year? Everyone is quick to mention the possibility of starters missing time, game time due to COVID, but I think we might be overlooking how physically grueling playing back-to-back-to-back-to-back conference games is going to be on teams. Normally, you need time to recover from a team like Georgia or LSU, and now that's gone. Does that additional chaos favor more upsets, or does it allow the teams at the top with more depth to shine?
I think a little bit of both, honestly.
And then is it?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, this other question is a different question, Charlie. So let's answer this one first.
Okay. Well, I just said I think a little bit of both because I think on the one hand, it will allow teams with more depth to shine, no doubt about it, especially as the season goes along. I think it also will favor teams early on that know what they're doing, which is why I kind of like playing Georgia so early. I feel like we're going to know what we're doing more than they do, just a little bit. But on the other hand, I don't think any team in the SEC is favored to go undefeated right now in Vegas. I think the lowest loss number Vegas has right now is 3, right? Like nobody's better than 7-3. Even Alabama is like, or 8-2 at the worst, right? At the best, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the top end record may be 8-2.
Yeah. Nobody's 9-1. I know that.
I think so. Yeah. I agree 100%. I don't think anybody's going undefeated.
Right. No, I agree.
I don't think, I mean, again, we didn't really see 2019 LSU coming. But I don't think there's a team out there like that, a juggernaut kind of a team that can roll through everybody.
That's what it would take.
You're 100% right. I think that's it.
I think we have a little delay or something going on tonight. I'm not trying to interrupt you, and I know you're not trying to interrupt me. I think that it's like you're not hearing me until after I'm already talking for a couple of seconds and vice versa. So I apologize. I will get that fixed if I can. But, no, I was just saying I think that it's going to be hyper-competitive this year, and I would be surprised. It would take a team like Cam's Auburn or Burrow's LSU that just kind of comes out of nowhere and shot. Like I could almost see like a Florida that nobody, you know, that everybody knows will be good, but just somehow puts it all together, you know, it all just clicks, that kind of thing. That's what I think it would take, something like that.
Yeah, but I think even those teams, you know, the last year's LSU didn't have to play this kind of schedule.
No.
You know, I think the grind of that, I think, really matters. And I think there's going to be some weeks when, you know, you played three or four tough games in a row, you don't have a bye week yet, and you're beat up, and maybe just have your A game.
Yeah, I agree. Do we want to go around the SEC, or we got any other questions? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, let's go around the SEC.
Let's take a trip.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Woo-hoo. Well, we talked about Newman. Newman? Hello, Newman.
Newman.
I got to get that one now. Oh, man, I got to get that now. Hello, Newman. Hello, Seinfeld. And then some Jurassic Park music. But what about, you had a note here that LSU is looking like 2011 Auburn. I thought that was interesting because I think it's slightly different, but I know what you mean. It's like they're going to end up like 2011 Auburn because they are losing more players than we did, but they started, I think, from a bigger overall place than we did. So they're kind of ending up in the same spot. You know what I mean?
Yes. But I think the difference is, I think you got the coaching element too, right? So I think that, but also like on offense, they have now two starters back.
Yeah, they don't have a lot left. Then they have like five overall.
One offensive lineman and one receiver.
Good grief.
Yeah, I mean, again, it wasn't just Jamar Chase was the best receiver in the country. He opted out. And there's one of their starting defensive tackles opted out, who was a real good player. So, you know, they have Stingley, and he's an absolute stud of a defensive back. And they have one safety, you know, one defensive tackle, and, you know, one defensive end, basically.
Early playing time.
Yeah. But so I think that, you know, any expectations for LSU beyond being just trying to be competitive this year are asking way too much.
Yeah. I don't see people putting them, you know, it's like a completely different team. It's a different team with a largely different coaching staff. I just don't know how anybody can rate them as like being almost as good as last year. They're not going to be anything like last year. I don't think they're going to go from 2010 to 2012 Auburn, but like you say, they may go to 2011, and that's 8-5, you know. So in that to this year in the SEC, that would translate to probably 6-4, 7-3 at best, I think.
5-5.
That could be. It could. It very well could. Is there some kind of a big outbreak at Tennessee?
Yeah, no, they had like 40 guys held out of practice last week. So,
jeez.
Again, we're approaching the point where if that happens, you know, a week from now, the SEC is going to reschedule a game. So I think what I want is, in my mind, I think we want to play Kentucky before we play Georgia. Even if it's a tough game, we want to get on the field and play a game before we have to go to Athens to play a game that matters. We don't want to play, especially we don't want to play Georgia in our first game if Georgia's already played a game.
No.
So I think so we want Kentucky to stay healthy, and we want the rest of the SEC to also. So it's really something to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, in addition, just we wanting everybody to stay healthy, we also, like you say, it would help to have teams able to actually play, because I mean, yeah, sitting around for a week twiddling our thumbs while Georgia gets some actual practice in against another team, I don't know who they play in week one, I don't really care, but they'll get some practice in, and we definitely don't need for them to be doing that while we're not.
They get Arkansas.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my goodness. Any last thoughts for tonight before we wrap up and mercifully shoot this show in the head?
Man, it's the early season for the show. We didn't do a lot of tackling in the off season. You know, we got to work out the kinks and get regular season form for the listeners.
You know, he's not 100%. Not 100%, but he was out there moving around, and it's still kind of day to day at this point. But the encouraging thing for me, he was out there moving around.
That's the show. That's our show. It's Gus's evaluation on our show right now.
It's out there moving around.
The encouraging thing is it is moving around, John. All right, well, let's bring this sucker in for a rough landing. Any landing we can walk away from is a decent landing, I guess. Our time is most definitely up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone.
Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.